we now have mics, and wow, do we have them. All right, so my deed is now, within a few words, going to be done for this event, because I'm going to turn the mic back over to our esteemed MC, Mr. James Forbes. Let's hear it.
So I really have no idea what I'm supposed to say or do here. But I think the topic we had decided we were going to discuss at the dinner was going to be stereotypes and typification of how mainstream people see people with low vision or blind issues. If mainstream's the right word. I got that from Jeff today. I heard him say it. I'm like the way that sounds. So, I'm not really sure. But I think everybody here has an opinion and has a story to tell that they can relate to how they feel they've broken stereotypes or molds in transactional situations on everyday life. So I haven't been blind for that long, 7.5 years, so I'm still trying to learn my way around and how I am to advocate for myself and for others when I am living my day-to-day life, and to make sure that every word I say and every action that I make is thought out enough to where I am advocating every time I do something. And that might be a little bit much, but for me it seems like it's something that I really need to do to make sure I, you know, put out there a picture of someone who's super confident in themselves and who has no doubts in their abilities. And I'm sure everyone here feels the same way, or you probably wouldn't be here. So I think what we're going to do is ask people to give personal accounts or stories of how they deal with stereotypes or typification and how they combat that in everyday life and everyday transactions. So we're going to open up the discussion and start passing this mic around and talk to people and get their ideas on stereotypical ideas and how they can break those molds and what they do to give us all some ideas on what they do in a day-to-day situation. I'm trying to recall a personal situation that I can relate to everyone, but I guess the thing I have most experience with is education, being seems like I've been in school ever since I lost my sight, so I spend most of my time at the university or on my way there. So it seems as though people, while many want to be very assistive to me in my endeavors, whether it be getting on the bus or getting off the bus or, you know, getting to my class, I like to, you know, I don't want to thwart people's attentiveness to needs, because there are often times that it is very appreciated, but I also want to make sure that people understand that I am quite capable of doing almost anything that they do except for watch silent movies or drive a forklift. Those are two things I try to keep to a minimum. But you know, there's still a lot of stereotypes, and I don't always know what they are until the experience has happened and I've moved on and I think back about it and I think, oh, you know, I really should have said this, or I should have acted this way, and I really, you know, want to present myself in a certain way. So I definitely see myself as a strong self-advocate. I advocate for others at school, and I think I try to teach people when I hold diversity conferences and disability roundtables at HSU, and I try to have people find strength in themselves and, you know, hope that they can advocate for themselves. And I find sometimes that people are people and they're, you know, have their own personalities, and just because they're blind or have a disability, that is not going to make them an advocate for themselves or for others. You either have a strong, outgoing personality as an extrovert or you don't. And that's something you can't really teach. So I hope, you know, that in the actions that I take as a person with a pretty strong personality, that I'm advocating for people while I'm teaching them at the same time how to not be self-conscious and feel intimidated by endeavors that are difficult to undertake and complete. So if anyone else out there has a story to tell about stereotyping or typification, I'm sure it would help everyone else to make it better through their everyday activities.
Well, this is Artis Bazin from Glendale Burbank chapter. I could think of a couple of things that stand out to me. I remember when I had my first child, and I would be going places with my daughter in her stroller and my husband, who was partially sighted. And one time at a courthouse, the gal at the courthouse said, "Oh, it must be nice. Your husband can change all the diapers and feed the baby." And I said, "I wish. I'm afraid he allows me to do that myself." And then a perfect thing happened. My daughter spit out her pacifier on the ground. I heard it hit. I reached down, picked it up, wiped it off, and gave it back to her. And she says, "Wow." So it was a perfect example of, you know, just showed him that, you know, I was able to handle her. Another thing is I have a small business, and I go to a lot of networking events. And one of the things I get asked all the time is, well, how can you edit, write articles? How can you coach people? How can you do that as a blind person? And so I often show people my note taker and tell them how I do things, and that gets me more business when I explain how I do things versus just letting them, you know, just not contact me.
This is Lena Bandy from President of Blind Students of California. I think one of my interesting ones was, of all things, music lessons. Mm-hmm. I was taking piano, and I was wanting to learn to play and sing, and the song that we started with was Amazing Grace. And my piano teacher asked if it would be offensive because the end of the first verse is, "Was blind, but now I see." So, yeah. But it was pretty interesting when I started singing that. And he's like, "Oh, okay, so you're not offended by it," and was just kind of surprised. It was just one of those stereotypes is that blind people do not want to hear the word "see," because it's some kind of like, oh, it's telling them what they can't do, or some, I don't know what people are thinking. You know, I get asked, "Oh, did you hear that movie?" Kind of like, okay. And I guess, I don't know, the other one was really a lot of people seem to think that it is okay to go behind a blind person and grab them. And I'm sorry, I will say this now, you do not grab any woman at 9:30 at night in the middle of the street if you don't want to get hit. Sighted or blind, or man, but definitely, you know. I mean, so I think it's just, with those, it's just a matter of educating people because, and I mean, besides the fact that that's very dangerous and grabbing somebody in the middle of climbing stairs is really not a smart idea. But I think, you know, I just think those types of stereotypes just take, okay, partly lead by example. Yes, I saw that movie, or telling people, okay, you can't grab me. You can't, I need to do it this way. Just explaining things. I think that's the only way you can really, you know, you have to be a self-advocate as far as that goes.
And I've experienced the same things. I don't know why, but it really bothers me when I'm just walking down the street, or I'm going to get on the bus, and someone thinks I'm not heading to the right, to the door correctly, so they grab my sleeve and my shirt and start giving me a tug,
yeah,
like I'm a 5-year-old kid or something. And I always, you know, politely pull away and say, no, a kind word will be sufficient. But yeah, no one likes to be tugged on or pulled on. So that is definitely always a good situation for education of the public, to let them know, you know, what is appropriate and what is not, for sure.
Hello, my name is Melissa Hudson from the Greater LA Chapter, and I just wanted to give a little anecdote story that, and this is going to sound a little vain, and I apologize, but I was on a train in LA, and there was a lady with her daughter sitting in front of me, and I guess she had turned around, and she, I guess, must have been staring at myself and my guide dog, and then asked me, are you really blind? And I said, yes, and she's like, but... you don't look blind. And so my response was, what does blind look like? And she was like, but, I mean, your hair's done. And you look so nice. And I was like, well, yeah, exactly. It was like, but you're beautiful. And I was like, wow, that was kind of like a backhanded compliment. You know, you're just like, thank you, I think.
It's just telling you're undercover.
You know, and it's just like, well, what do you think? I literally just roll out of bed and have no concept? She could not figure, like, how can you do your hair? And as she's doing this, I'm counting the stops, and I knew that she had said, you know, what stop I was going to, and she was getting off. And so, you know, as I'm talking to her, and then I'm thinking, this is your stop. And because she's so busy talking, and I'm like, you know what? You're about to miss your stop. She's like, what? You know, she's like, has to run out with her. And I'm like, yeah, the blind girl, make sure you got off on the right stop.
That's right. I love it.
Well, okay, I guess I'll go. The one today, which was brought up in general section about praying for you to cure you. Amen, brother and sister. You know, it's funny. I deal with that in various ways, depending upon my mood. Sometimes I'm just, oh, I just don't care today. And I'm just, okay, thank you very much. Goodbye. I'm totally emotionless. You know, oh, thank you. Other times, I'm very rational. I say, well, you know, that's a very nice thing that you've asked me, but really, I think I'm pretty much okay, so that's okay. And other times, I get pissed off. I don't want to hear any of this. What? So that's enough for me.
Jeff, I got a good one for you. I think we should pass some legislation on this one.
There's your mic.
It should go in all driver's ed manuals that when you see a blind person standing on the corner, you don't stop your car and wave them on. I still haven't figured that one out yet. And the other one that I loved, I went into a pro shop one day, and the golf pro's sitting there, and he said, hello, can I help you? Real loud. And I said, no, I'm all set, thank you.
I just want to say that I'm happy because I just celebrated my 65th anniversary, and we're still on our honeymoon. We're still kissing and hugging and all that good stuff.
No hands are up right now.
Oh, okay. It's just funny that Jeff mentioned that. I heard that today at the session. And I've had at least three people pray for me in the last couple of months. And I get real. Yeah. And I was actually, twice it happened working out. So I'm on the treadmill once, a couple weeks ago. And a couple weeks before that, I'm lifting weights. I'm covered in sweat. I'm on the treadmill. I'm just going. And they put their hand on my gross, sweaty body. And they stand there and they, you know, do a little prayer for me. And I kind of look over and smirk and I say, thank you, because I don't want to be rude. I want to be culturally competent and let everyone, you know, believe their beliefs. But, so I haven't gotten rude or angry about it yet. Like I said, you know, I don't, at that point, I don't even know if there's any education I can do.
No.
You know, because, you know, they just have their belief system, and so I just let them touch my sweaty body and then go on about their business.
There's a hand up.
Okay.
There you go, Shannon.
Now, this is Sherry Gabrielson from Bayview, president of Bayview Chapter. One of my favorite ones was when my girls were very little, and people would always, they would either think they had the right to touch my babies, or they would, especially when they were in preschool, they would look at my daughters and say, well, you have to hurry up and grow up and take care of your mommy. Well, this one night in the ladies' room in a pizza parlor, my ex-husband was waiting outside, and this lady, you know, my daughter, and I saw it coming, the way she was running. She was a very energetic four-year-old. I'm pregnant with the second daughter, and I knew that she was going to fling the door open, so I put my arm out to, you know, across my face and chest to protect myself. And of course, the door hit my arm. And that was no big deal. Then she started chastising my daughter, and I glared at her. I gave her the death glare and growled, I take care, back off. I take care of my own. And then my ex said, I was wondering why she flew out of there like a bat out of, you know, where.
Okay. This is Joseph. I got a good one. Me and my wife, we like to go out and eat a lot. And this one time, we went, let's call, most of you have heard of the Outback Steakhouse. And the waitress comes to my wife, she was going to order her dinner. And so she does, and the waitress asks my wife, well, what does he want? And my wife said, well, he can speak for himself. He's not deaf. He's just blind. And I just got one more. Years ago, I used to live in North Carolina. I don't know if you've ever experienced any of this, but I used to ride the bus a lot, and at that time, blind people were told to get the back of the bus, and I was one of them. So that was, I think that was one of my learning experience, how to deal with it, and we just went and deal with it proper, and I didn't get angry. So that's it. There you go.
Hi, this is Stephen Frazier. I'm from the San Joaquin chapter, Fresno. My story is not going to be a really nice one. It's a kind of a very disgusting one, actually. I had an ophthalmologist that saw me. I was looking into an eye condition called ptysis, which means your eyes are dying. So I'm looking into maybe getting prosthetic eyes, and I was not aware that you don't get them both at the same time. I haven't gotten these eye replacements yet at all, but the doctor told me that I couldn't get them both at the same time because blind people, nobody pays attention to blind people, and when they see you walking down the street with your cane, they get as far away from you as they can anyway. Yeah. I advocated strongly for the blind to the office manager and thought about going to some kind of a board over this. But I told the doctor I wanted them both replaced at once, and that's what he told me. I was just appalled that someone in the medical field could be so cruel. So I took it to the level at least of the office manager and got a different doctor in the office, obviously. And that's my story. There's quacks out there that don't have a feeling for people. So, yeah, that's what I was hoping for, maybe. Thank you.
Okay, this is Linda Perel, San Francisco chapter president. Just a quickie first. I find the best response to the God folk is, God bless you too. And that really brings them up short. Because for a moment, they thought they were looking down on someone and being benevolent. And all of a sudden, you switched positions. Okay, now here's what I really want to talk about. A few months ago, I had this revelation. And the revelation was, you could wave your magic wand today and eliminate all the stereotypes about vision loss in the world. And everybody would be happy. Things would go along fine for about 25 years. Maybe not that long, Liz says. I agree with her. You'd have to keep waving it because a new generation would be born and they would have to go through the same process. So what I realized was, and at first when I realized this, I thought, oh my God, we'll never win, we'll never get over it. And after that I thought, no, we're liberated. Now we know that this is hardwired into the sighted world. When someone first encounters one of us, and yes, I found out later, it has something to do with sex. When they first encounter one of us, they have to look, is this a potential mate? And that this is done on a very reptilian brain level. And so I'm calling it, and I'm going to copyright this, folks, for my book. I'm calling this the reptilian moment. So they encounter us, and they are repulsed. Oh, my God, I can't procreate with this one. So so they have to spin around inside themselves and then get back up to their neocortex and try to make sense of the world. And our place to meet them is on the other side of the reptilian moment. And this is where we begin to work with them to tear down all the stereotypes and cultural things that they've built up about us over the years. So I'm going to leave you with something a little provocative. I welcome all of the Saturday Night Live spoofs of Governor Patterson and the blindness movie and anything that they can drag out and show about us, because in fact, what they're doing is dismantling their own taboos. And we'll sweep some of that away with them and for them. So bring it on. Yeah.
Hi, this is Christy Crespin, and I have a couple of things. Since I've been at this convention, they've been asked twice, two different settings, what does she want? And I said, you know, it's really okay to talk to me. So then they did. As far as the praying for you, when you work at a place like I do, Patton State Hospital, and you get individuals who are under the delusion that they are God or Jesus, saying God bless you back kind of doesn't work.
Okay.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Lee Morton, and I think you have to distinguish sometimes, or at least I do, between the people who are just plain want to know, don't understand, and so they may ask a stupid question, but at least they want to know. And so I sort of go with that, well, no matter how dumb the answer is, I'll answer it even. But where I have a problem is sometimes when it's just they are so set in their ways they don't want to learn anything. And like there's a lady who rides the buses on San Diego Transit, and every now and then a lot of us have run into her. What are you people doing on the buses? You should have someone take you around. You shouldn't even be out here. It's not safe for you. And so I just said, ma'am, if you want to get Governor Schwarzenegger to pay for it, that's great. I'll take the ride. Thank you very much. And then I want to finish up with a guide dog user. Just, I guess, sometimes you just get funny ones, and those I just let go. But this is such a great story. I got on a bus one day. And a mom and her, I would say, 5 or 6 year old daughter got on the bus. Said, "Mommy, there's a doggy on the bus." And of course, she told her the whole thing. Yes, the doggy helps the lady get around, you know, see, and helps her get around, and all this other stuff. And then we talked for a little bit, and then they got off at their stop, and I got off at mine. And then about a week later on a Saturday, I was on that same bus route going somewhere. And then the mother and the daughter happened to get on the bus that same, you know, the same stop they got on. Kid got on and said, "Mommy, do you think that lady's been on the bus all week?"
That was great. This is Anne from Sacramento, and I'm actually a native San Diegan too, which really has nothing to do with this story, but this is one of these things that happened like over 40 years ago, but I'll never forget it. I was taking orientation mobility class with a wonderful instructor at the time, Jack Hayes Camp. I don't know, some of you may know him. Lee knows him, obviously. Judy knows him. So, wonderful guy. We're walking along my neighborhood streets, and an old lady came up, and we chatted for a little bit, and, you know, talk about the weather and whatever, and what are you doing? And she says, this is such a funny thing that people have this concept of blind people that we all must know every other blind person in the world. So she says, "Well, dear, you must know my nephew, George." And I said, George, you know who, George. And she said his last name. I don't remember what it was. And I said, "No, I don't know him. Where does he live?" And she says, "Oh, San Antonio." So it just goes to show you. I said, "Nope, never been to San Antonio. Do not know George, but nice talking to you. Have a good day. Bye."
Hello. I'm Jerry Arakawa. And this is a story about the resilience and inexperience of kids, I guess. I was in Washington Irving Junior High School as part of the LA Unified School Mainstream Program. And in the eighth grade, our first day of eighth grade class, we had a substitute teacher named Mr. Claus. Mr. Claus. Actually, it was K-L-A-U-S, but he told us it was Claus. Well, it was kind of, I didn't realize it at the time, but it seems odd that one of the first things he wanted to do was to have the class elect a president of the class. And, of course, being mainstream, you know, there were just a few blind kids whom everybody knew in their respective classes. So people knew me fairly well. And he asked everyone to vote for their class president. And my name happened to come up, and I was actually voted class president. Well, what happened, he didn't know me at all. As I say, he was a substitute. When he asked, who's Jerry Arakawa? I happened to be sitting in the front row since we were all alphabetically seated. He found out who I was, and he slammed his book on the desk and raised his voice to the entire class and said, you have no level of sensitivity at all. How can you actually vote for this poor fellow to be your class president? What the point of the story is, and this is, you know, I mentioned earlier that this is about resiliency and experience. Everyone in the class, you know how eighth graders are, they're always cutting up and making noise. But he reduced the class to absolute silence. We couldn't figure out what it, and literally he went on for 2 minutes, you know, stomping around and saying how insensitive the class was and so forth, and he demanded that we choose someone else. Which we did, the class did. And interestingly enough, I had no idea that this had to, it was only years and years later that I put this two and two together and get three. I couldn't figure out what the whole tantrum was about. And students came up to me later in our second period and asked, what was this guy's problem? Why was he yelling and screaming? So as kids, as we grow up, especially if we're familiar, it seems to me as we, if we grow up in a school where people get to know you and they may even, you know, they don't even consider us as people with disabilities. Back in those days, we never even used a cane. Oddly enough, we were discouraged. And those of you who are went to school in the 50s know this, that we were not, we were not encouraged to use the cane at all. So people really didn't look at me as a blind person, I think. And nobody, including myself, had any idea that this whole issue had to do with blind stereotypes. So it's kind of an interesting situation. Thank you.
Gary?
Hi, I'm Vivian Younger, and I'm from the Silicon Valley Council, Adeline. And I want to make a comment about, well, I was trained as an elementary school teacher. And the one comment I want to make before I tell you the big story is that when I would have a class just before, I'd have a parent conference tea, and I would tell them, if there's anything that you have a concern about your child in my class, speak up now or get out now. And what I would do is I would show them how I would teach the all the different subjects, you know, how I would write the math problems on the chalkboard and things like that. No one ever took the child out. And I had 35 kids. They're, you know, sighted kids. And I had a wonderful experience. But I got to tell you about this other one. One year, I was a substitute teacher. So, you know, I'd have, you know, third graders one day, and I would be junior high the next day. So the school gave me an assignment to go to a continuation school. Now, I didn't exactly know what that was, okay? So I showed up to the school, and the principal goes, you cannot teach here. I go, excuse me, if the district thinks that I can teach here, I should be able to do it. I says, I'll tell you what. Why don't we go through some periods with the class, and you can observe, okay? And so he finally agreed to that. So my first, second, and third period went just fine. The fourth period, now the continuation school are people who have just got out of jail or kids are in and out of school, okay? That's who I was facing, okay? So, all right. And I says, uh-oh, we have an attitude problem as soon as the first kids come into the you know, the classroom. And so anyway, I heard them outside saying, oh, we have it really easy today. We have a blind teacher. And so they came in, they sat down, I introduced myself, and then I said, you know what? Would you stop writing four-letter words on the board? Oh. And somebody go, whoa, how did she know that? and so the kid just went and sat down. He was so shocked, okay? And then the next thing that happened was this one kid got up all of a sudden, and I had a guide dog at the time. And so the dog went, and you know what? The class was quiet as a church mouse for the whole period. And so then when it was time for me to go home, the principal goes, you can't possibly walk through this neighborhood. I go, but sir, that's how I got here. I took two buses to get here. And so I said, okay, I says, I tell you what, because what I felt like is, he was out of fear, lack of education, if you will, and not understanding. And I says, I'll tell you what, you can drive me to the first bus stop and I'll go back home. But I want you to understand that I took two buses and I walked the neighborhood and there was no problem. So what I just want to say is that a lot of times, even if we don't feel like doing it, we have to educate. And sometimes we also have to think that we may be the only blind person that someone ever come in contact with. And that's why we have to put our best foot forward, even though we may even have an attitude about it, okay? And that's what I want to encourage. The years that I've taught in the public schools, that's what I've learned a lot for. So I'm just glad that everybody, you know, we're out here and we're doing what we're doing. And I wish there were more blind people out there. So what I want to encourage everybody is for the next convention, invite somebody that has never been, who's visually impaired. And so we can have more and more of us walking on the streets. And just by us being in the stores and going to different places, we are walking education for the public.
Hello, everybody. This is Donna. No, I'm not going to talk about sweepstakes tickets. But they are available, Jeff said. the story that I'm going to tell, it's Mitch and I like to do a lot of traveling. And, stereotypes are so interesting. There was this one time where I think it was Mazatlan We were in Mazatlan. And, Mitch calls me the intrepid explorer because that's just who I am. I need to explore. I need to, I just like to walk around and see where I end up. So we went exploring the town, left the hotel, and, here we are both, walking around and stuff. And all of a sudden I hear this idling behind us a little bit of a distance. And I thought, okay, well, somebody's looking for something. They're driving slow. No big deal. Keep walking forward, checking out the buildings, seeing, where we were. And that car was still there. And I said, this person is following us. And, we kept walking, looking around. So all of a sudden the car drives up right next to us, and the gentleman says, "Where are your people?" And I said, "What people?" And he says, "Get in the car. I'll take you back to your people. You're out here all by yourself. Yes, we're fine. But let me take you to your people." "No, I'm sorry. Unfortunately, we have no people." Yeah, Jeff says I tell him about the donation for the orphan people. But anyway, but that was interesting. I mean, people see, you know, would see us traveling by ourselves, both of us with our canes or cane and dog, you know, when Mitch was using Scotch. And it's just so interesting when we, you know, would go to different people's places. One last story on that. Well, now that you mention bourbon, this is actually a story about a time that we were in New Orleans. And, you know, here I am, the intrepid explorer. Mitch has learned, he is trainable, whether you believe it or not, that when I get into intrepid explorer mode, you know, he just needs to come along and say, yes, dear. And, you know, we wander around. So we're walking around Bourbon Street. That's where I go back to bourbon, like Roger said. We're walking around Bourbon Street and everything, and, you know, all the music's playing around us, and everything was just, you know, Bourbon Street. It was awesome. And all of a sudden, I hear this whistle from across the street, you know, and you know, you hear sax playing and stuff. And the gentleman goes, "Oh, wait, it's all right. You're still beautiful." Anyway, those are my two stereotype stories.
Okay. This is Bernice Kandarian, and I'm president of the California Council of Citizens with Low Vision. And I just wanted to, two things. I wanted to say to Linda Perel, Linda, in your book, are you going to talk about the blind snake that tried to rape a rope? that tried to rape a rope.
She's not with me.
when Roger and I lived in Washington, D.C., we were taking the metro to the District Line. We were going to a party at the home of Barbara Nelson and Chris Bell. Some of you may recognize the names. Barbara is an attorney who used to work for the American Council, and Chris Bell used to work for the EEOC. And excuse me. So we were exiting through the elevator instead of the escalator because it was closer to the direction we were going. It was a very tiny elevator, and the subway is very deep at that point. And we get into this elevator. It was maybe could have held six people. And a sighted lady got in with us. And we started a very slow crawl up. And the lady said, "I know where you're going." And Roger, standing next to me, he turns his head toward me and says, "And
she said, where
she, yeah, she said, yeah, what street? She named the street we were going." And he turned to me and said, "She thinks we're the Snyders. All blind people look alike." And we were not going to Harold and Gail Snyder's, but that very long ride, the whole way, she kept saying, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, I'm so sorry."
So I think we're just about out of time, so we can all get back to the next general session at 7. But I want to thank everyone for their stories, because everyone I hear brings up a story that I have, an experience that I've gone through, so I'm sure that's the same for all of us. I have to end with one last thing that I came to mind when I think of Vivian, I think is your name, as a school teacher, Vivian? Yeah. It was very inspiring, because last summer when I was trying to find an internship in my master's program, I went to be an intern with a school social worker at an elementary school. And after about 2.5 hours, I had won over the social worker, and I thought for sure I had the position as an intern until I met the principal of the school, and he was more than freaked out that a blind person was going to be monitoring children. I did not get the internship. I had to go elsewhere. But one of the questions he asked me in our interview was, when you're in class and two kids start fighting, how are you going to know they're fighting? And I said, you ever heard two kids fight silently? I'm going to assume he hasn't. And even though I had an answer for every question he threw at me, I still did not get it, because even with the maximum self-advocacy and extroverted attitude, some people are still too scared to cross that line. So, so we just got to keep going and keep moving. So I think the stories are awesome. I want to thank you all for sharing. And it definitely inspires me, and I'm sure every one of us here, you know, to keep fighting. All right, thanks a lot, everybody. Never silently.